You are listening to the Wool Academy podcast. This is episode number 3. Hello and welcome. My name is Elizabeth Van Delden, and once a week we talk to an industry expert from the wool industry supply chain, from farm to fashion and beyond, delivering strategies and insights to be successful in wool and showcasing those beautiful stories wool has to tell. Today's episode is supported by The Wool Room. The Wool Room is dedicated to delivering you a better night's sleep. At thewoolroom.com, you can choose from a wide range of mattresses, mattress protectors, bedding and beds filled with British wool, ensuring that you stay cool and comfortable at night. Find out how wool can improve your sleep by visiting thewoolroom.com and claim your 10% discount with the promo code WOOLACADEMY. Without further ado, let's get started with today's guest. We are happy to welcome Tune Skardal Tobiasen. Tune lives in Norway and she is a journalist and editor and author of several books. But I think everyone who knows Tune would describe her as a true wool ambassador and advocate for sustainable fashion. Tune, welcome. It is so great to have you on our show today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Wonderful. Thanks for your time. And why don't you get us started by giving our audience a little bit more information about yourself and your work?
Well, as you said, I'm basically a journalist, but I used to be in the fashion industry, working for a fashion magazine. But then I decided to do something more meaningful with my life. So I started to work with sustainable issues surrounding specifically textiles and fashion. And slowly but surely got more involved in projects relating to this, research projects. And then that has led to lectures and books and other types of communication forms.
Okay, and what was it that made you fall in love with wool?
Well, I think it was, I think most Norwegians actually, even though they don't maybe think about it that much, are wool lovers, because it's so much in the DNA of us. But I think it's specifically developed because of the what I think is it is one of the most sustainable fibers out there. But also just how one can wear it in all types of setting, and just knowing about the quality and the passion behind it, the people who are actually from the wool producers and all the way through to the designers. And I think it's one of the fibers that once you start to understand it, you start to understand the technical qualities and what it can actually do, which is more or less a miracle, then you just can't stop loving it.
Yeah, and you said that wool is so important in the, or like part of the Norwegian DNA. Can you go a little bit more deeper? Like, I know that like it's already with children, you have to clothe the Norwegian children in wool. Can you explain that a little bit more?
Yeah, we generally say that you're a bad parent in Norway if you don't dress your kids in wool. And in the kindergartens, they all the parents generally get a letter home with them at the start of the fall season, where they're told that the kids have to wear wool underwear. And that has several practical aspects, because for the kindergarten kids, they're outside a lot in Norway, so they don't play only indoors, so they have to be dressed for all the different seasons, and they'll just pull on a what they call a park suit on the outside, and they'll be outside with a nice warm wool on the inside. And if they get wet or sweaty or anything, then of course the temperature is regulated, and they don't feel clammy or cold or wet or anything. And then once they come inside, they just take off the park suit, and then they jump around in their wool underwear, which are generally long johns and long-sleeved tops. And they consider themselves fully dressed, even though somebody coming from another country would look at them and say, hey, they're wearing thermal underwear. What is this? You know, they're not really fully dressed, but they will consider themselves as fully dressed, which is, of course, what's important. But and this was a change that actually happened that I remember, because when my kids were in kindergarten, they did not have this woolen underwear. They generally wore fleece, or they wore polyester super underwear. And but in the 90s, we had a Norwegian skier who launched his own line, and he was very popular. And he really made it popular for both grown-ups and kids to wear this thermal wool underwear when they were skiing outdoors, especially during fall and winter season. And then it slowly but surely became the way that kids were dressing in the kindergarten. And now we see that even the grown-ups are adopting this more and more. For sports, but also it's slowly but surely also creeping into the more leisure wear, and that's, you know, just because people feel really, really comfortable in it. And I was talking to a mom who's a friend of mine the other day, and she was saying that, you know, I really noticed that if I forget to dress my kids in the wool underwear, they get sick immediately. You know, if I by mistake dress them in something in cotton, but a couple of days later, they're sick.
Yeah. No, I find it really fascinating how Norwegians use wool in their everyday life, and I think it's important that the rest of the wool industry really better understands this culture, to see how other countries can adapt these traditions as well. But speaking of Norway and wool, you also have a new project that you call Cruise, if I say it correctly. Can you talk a little bit about that project?
Cruise, spelled K-R-U-S, is the Norwegian word for crimp. And Norwegian wool has exceptional crimp, which is why it's used a lot in carpets, wall-to-wall carpeting. This specific project that is led by the Consumer Research Institute, CIFO, is actually to enhance the local value chains for Norwegian wool. And it's a project from the Research Council in Norway. And it's a huge, huge project, several million euros. And it looks at different types of approaches to the local wool. But it's under a specific part of the Research Council work, which is with bio-based products. So it was that we actually got this project is more or less a miracle, because it was in competition with all bio-based industries. And everybody, you know, is super, we're moving towards this bio-based society. And so everybody wants to get into this area. So it was actually a miracle that we got it. But it looks at a lot of different aspects. One thing is this transparency and origin, for example, about labeling of wool, like one has ice wool in Iceland and one has Swiss wool in Switzerland and British wool, and how this could work in Norway, because, for example, the traditional Norwegian sweaters can, or at least some of the brands have Norwegian wool in them, but others don't. They use imported wool, and this is not signaled in any good way, so there is no labeling today. So we're looking at how could this be in the future, and is there a need for labeling, etc., etc. But we're also looking at some local sheep breeds that have specific problems attached to their wool. It can be that the quality of the wool has deteriorated over the last years. It can be that it's pigmented so that the industry doesn't really like it. And that type of thing. So we had three different types of local breeds that we're working with. We're also looking at new business models because business as usual is disappearing in the fashion and textile industry to a large degree because of this fast fashion that has undermined the system completely. So we're looking at new business models that can be interesting for companies. And we're also looking at the whole concept of slow fashion, local fashion. And this is a work package that we're doing together with Kate Fletcher in the UK. And she works a lot with this these type of things. And so this is going to be an area where totally new research is going to surface. And then, of course, we have the dissemination package, which I generally then lead for different projects.
Okay, wow, that really sounds like a big project. And is it also, did I understand correctly, is it also about how can more manufacturing be, again, done in Norway and not abroad? Is that also part of the concept?
Yes, it's part of the looking at the new business models because there is this reshoring or onshoring or this whole thing about made in Italy, made in UK, manufactured New York. There are all these things happening now internationally where we're seeing the sort of return to more local production. In the same way that there's been the whole slow food movement, which is based on local produce, which is in season, etc., etc. There is a movement globally in this direction too, because people want to feel connected again with the products. They want some sense of where things come from, where they're produced, provenance, etc. It's becoming more and more important. And luckily for Norway, we still have some spinning mills, and we have both knitting factories and weaving mills still here. So now we are working closer and closer together, trying to reconnect the value chain so that these companies that haven't really worked together very efficiently over the last 30, 40 years are now coming together and trying to find new ways to cooperate. And so actually Thursday this week we're having a meeting with some of the actors from spinning mills, and also from one of the small weaving factories on the northwest coast, because there's a big Oslo design fair, and a lot of the people will be actually in the Oslo region for that. So we're going to sit down and discuss, you know, what type of new products and cooperations can be activated.
Yeah, and do you also think this is like a general trend also that the wool industry can tap into, and also maybe for upcoming designers and entrepreneurs something to look at?
Yes, and I think it's partially driven by technology and the technological development that's ongoing in, for example, knitting machines that are getting extremely advanced, but also simpler to use. And we were talking to one of the guys who imports Shimaseki machines to Norway, and he was explaining that, you know, only a few years ago you really had to be a engineer, technically very competent to run these machines and to program them, but it's becoming simpler and simpler. So now the machine will tell you if you're trying to do something that it actually can't do. So I think we'll come to maybe to the level where if several designers cooperate, they can maybe buy a knitting machine, a whole garment machine, and actually have the production in their own studio. So it is very technologically driven, that will change things drastically in the next decade, I'm sure.
Mm. No, I agree, and I think it's a huge opportunity for innovation and, yeah, for a small niche fiber like wool.
Yeah, and it also means you can have smaller runs. And you can make sure that, you know, the things actually fit the consumer, so that you're not so reliant on, you know, mass production, large volumes, that because the price it'll be easier to keep the prices down.
Yeah, exactly. And earlier you also mentioned that things like provenance are becoming more and more important, and that consumers want to know more about how their products are made. But at the same time, like, I was talking to Leslie Pryor this morning, and she said she sometimes gets questions like, do your sheep actually also sleep? And there's a huge, and someone else was telling me that their taxi driver didn't know that lamb came from sheep. So there seems to be a real disconnect between the consumer and their understanding of how their products are being made. Why do you think
there's a huge knowledge gap out there, and that's part of what really needs to be addressed, because I was talking to the CEO at Oleana, which is a Norwegian iconic knit factory, and Signe, who owns the factory, it's on the west coast outside of Bergen. And it's now part of the Icono Musee system, so one can actually visit the factory and see how things are produced there. She generally often invites in school classes. So when they're at secondary level, the class comes into the factory, and they are before they're shown around. She asks all the school kids, "Oh, what are you wearing?" And they go, jeans, t-shirt. And she goes, no, that's not what I was asking. I was asking, what type of fiber are you wearing? Are you wearing cotton? Are you wearing wool? Are you wearing polyester? And they all look at her like big question marks. It's like, how would we know? And she tells them, well, they then read on the label, because it will tell you that your jeans are made from cotton, et cetera, et cetera. And everybody, you know, starts pulling off their clothes to look at the labels to see what they're actually wearing. And then she asks, well, your jeans, are they knit or are they woven? And everybody will be like big question marks. They have no idea what the difference between knit and woven is. And so then she'll explain the difference, and then she'll show them around the factory. And of course, then their eyes are huge, like, because they're actually understanding the processes behind this. And but it goes to show, you know, that most young people have absolutely no idea. They think clothes magically appear out of some machine. They don't know that that there's a lot of handwork involved and a lot of artisan knowledge. I think more or less every child, when, you know, they're old enough to understand these processes, should go visit a factory.
That sounds like a really good educational program that your colleague is doing there. And I know also that you do, or you did, a lot of research also better understanding the consumers. And what did you learn were like the main barriers for consumers in regards to wool, and how can we address that?
Well, we have compared, for example, Norway and Sweden on this account, because Swedes are not big wool users, and that's a big mystery, because of course they have the same climate as we do. So one would think that they would be wool users too, but they aren't. They use synthetic underwear. also during winter, because it their whole idea is that it transports out the sweat and so that's why they use the synthetics. But the understanding that actually wool, when it gets wet, doesn't feel wet at all, so it doesn't matter that it gets sweaty. But also the fact that it doesn't smell the way the synthetics do is becoming more and more important for the consumer. And the understanding that the wool is temperature regulating, I think, is very, very hard to get across, because I talked to several people about this. And when you start explaining why wool is temperature regulating, they go, I hear what you say, but I don't believe you. Because it's so associated with being something that keeps you warm and not something that can also cool you down. So I think, you know, to really, really, people really have to try it out themselves to understand how it works. And I guess I became completely convinced that it's true when I was in New York for the IWTO Congress there. And I had bought a t-shirt at Icebreaker, and it was 30-some degrees outside. And I wore it on my last day when I was going back home to Norway. And it was so humid, and it was so warm. And I was lugging around my daughter's luggage, and I was swearing. And it was a terrible day. But, you know, I felt comfortable wearing this t-shirt. And I sweated, and everything was fine, because I didn't really get overheated. And then I came out to the airport, and I checked in my daughter's luggage, and I had my own carry-on. And there I had, of course, the jacket I was going to put on once I boarded the plane, which are planes are generally ice cold. I was told that I could also check in that luggage, so I sent that luggage off, and then, oh, shoot. There went my jacket.
Mm-hmm.
So I was still only wearing this wool t-shirt. But I came on board the plane, and it was, as usual, freezing cold, but I was still comfortable. So I'd gone from 30-some degrees and then into the cold airplane wearing the same t-shirt, and no matter what, I was comfortable.
Yeah, that's the wonderful properties of wool, as we know them. Yeah.
And if you talk to people who live in very, very warm climates, so, you know, we've been in Dubai, for example, they say, no, we can't use wool. We can't use wool. We have to use cotton. And it's like, well, you're going in and out of air-conditioned shopping centers and into the, you know, the heat. If you're wearing cotton, you're going to get sick going between those extremes. But if you wear the thin wool, you know, you'll be perfectly fine in both settings.
Mm. So the barrier is really the learned perception of what fibers do, and you need to show them actively.
Yeah. So I think, you know, I think in many ways probably YouTube is the best way to get that type of message across in an effective way. And I've seen that Woolmark has made a nice cartoon explaining some of this. There just needs to be more ways of different ways of explaining it to people, so that one also needs to have the products available so that one can actually get hold of them. And when we were in Sweden and talking to the consumers there about, you know, next to skin wool, and we talked to people who were they'd become wool lovers, and they were more or less almost fanatical about it. They were like, oh, where can we get these products? Where can we get this wool bra? Where can we get this wool, you know, thin t-shirt? And so we had to give them a whole list of where, you know, the different companies that actually sell these. Because it's not easy to find. And in Sweden, you know, we walked into some children's clothing stores and asked, oh, do you have anything in wool? And for the most part, they looked at us like we were crazy. But actually, you know, some of the stores did have some wool clothing. And, but, it, you know, not huge amounts of it. It's a lot of cotton out. There's a lot of cotton out there for the in children's clothing.
Hmm. Yeah, and then it's probably also not clearly identified that these garments are made out of wool.
Nope.
So people might just look at the price tag and find it very expensive, not understanding the benefits of the product itself.
So then you need, of course, the people in the store, the ones who are meeting the consumers, to have this understanding too, so that they can explain, you know, why there's a difference in price that goes to the quality and that goes to the properties of the fiber, and that it's well worth the price.
Yeah, exactly. And you just mentioned also, you know, educational videos on YouTube. And I also noticed that you are very active on social media. So tell me a little bit how you're using social media to get the different messages about wool out there.
Well, I use, I'm quite active on Twitter and Instagram and on Facebook. And on Facebook, of course, I have different groups and pages that I post things on, related to both the Cruz project, but also to the NICE project, the Nordic Initiative Clean and Ethical. And there we have both a page and a group. And so every time there's, you know, something related to sustainable issues when it comes to wool, then I post it on there. But if it goes more to local concerns regarding wool, then I post it on the Cruz, in the Cruz group. But we also have Campaign for Wool page on Facebook for the Norwegian Campaign for Wool. So sometimes I post things there. So it's, you know, all the time being active, making sure that links to interesting articles or reports are put out there on Twitter, and then making sure that I also tag the relevant people, be it organizations that I know or people that I know agree, and that they'll spread it in their network, or it might be somebody I know that completely disagrees, and but I'll still tag them so they have to read the article. And on Instagram, I have started my own crusade for wearing wool. Mm-hmm. So if I'm going to the gym and I'm wearing wool, I might post a picture of my wool gym clothes. Or this weekend, I was in the mountains with my husband's family, so I posted a few pictures on Instagram about wearing wool there. And also during Oslo runway, I wore wool on the 2 days, and I made sure to post pictures of myself wearing the wool dress or the wool skirt. And then I'll, of course, also make sure that the brand gets tagged, so that they, again, you know, can like it, or they can retweet or re-Instagram or whatever it's called when you repeat something on Instagram. I just try to keep the noise level up.
Yeah, and what do you think... how should the wool industry approach social media, and how can they take more advantage of the different social media channels?
Well, I think that, for example, Instagram, just all the time telling, you know, cute little stories or have nice pictures of sheep. I took some pictures of sheep this weekend too and posted that. Is very important, and it's, you know, Instagram is all about nice pictures. So nice pictures of sheep, nice pictures of the wool clothing, how the wool clothing is used. I noticed that some of the companies are good at that. But you know, the at all levels of the industry, for example, even the weaving companies, knit companies, can put out a lot of really nice stuff. I noticed that the Scottish weaving mills are really good at using at least Twitter. They're super good. And Twitter is partially about nice pictures, but it's also about getting out the links to articles, different sites, whatever. Because there, of course, you have so limited number of letters that you can actually put out in the Twitter message. But you can also, of course, add a picture, which will tell some extra stories. But Twitter is at least I follow so many that I miss a lot of the stuff that's put out there. And I don't have time to, you know, follow it all the time. On Instagram, I think people have generally maybe fewer followers and follow fewer. So it's easier to come through and actually get attention. Twitter, of course, people are there are good at spreading things too. If they see something they like, they'll retweet. But I think it's also working between the platforms. So if you put out something nice on Instagram, then you can also put it out on Facebook, so that you interconnect all the time between the different platforms. It's again, you know, it's all about noise level and probably repeating things over and over and over again, but in different ways, because it's going to be a haul, maybe a long haul, but people will I think finally understand, because now people are starting to talk about this, that they're sick of just stuff, they're sick of fast fashion, they're sick of this I sort of have named it DDT, the modern DDT, which is design destined for trash. People's closets are full of stuff they don't use. They're starting to realize that maybe we should downscale, we should downsize, we should go back to other values that are about quality, that are about feeling good about what you're wearing, not just buying just to buy. There's this whole reaction thing going on, and once the reaction starts, things can change very quickly. And I think it's important for wool to position itself as a fiber that is part of this change and is part of this change in attitude, that we should take better care of the things we have, that we should think about our clothing as something valuable, as something that we love. And you never hear anybody say, "I love my synthetic fleece jacket." Never heard anybody say that, but you'll hear people say they love their old wool sweater, or they love this and that, and often it will be a wool jacket, or it'll be something that they really, really are passionate about. But I have yet to hear somebody say, "Oh, I really love my fleece jackets."
Yes, that's probably true. But also what you were just talking about, Twitter and also fast fashion and kind of the contra movement towards slow fashion. One interesting example that you're very closely connected to is Livia Firth, who is also a very strong advocate against fast fashion, and she started this campaign on Twitter called 30 Wears.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
It started. We talked a lot of times, but she's been. I first started talking a little bit to her when she was a guest at the first campaign for wool launch in London. I wasn't there physically, but she had worked with some Norwegian designers, among others Nina Skara, who's worked a lot with wool. I ended up meeting her in New York when Nina Skara had her launch there. Which was at the same time as the IWTO Congress was there. she was a guest there, and we ended up, and it was Crown Princess of Norway was there, and Livia is also a friend of the Crown Princess of Norway. We ended up talking and hit it off, and since then, you know, we've been in contact a lot, and she also was a speaker at the Copenhagen Fashion Summit 2 years ago, and then again this spring. Her initial sort of take on sustainable fashion was, of course, looking at, she works with a company called EcoAge, which is a consultancy, and she has had this green carpet challenge with Vogue. And her initial approach was a lot about, you know, doing things in the right way, working with designers who had a sustainable approach. But she has, after we've had some discussions also, and talking about this, you know, well, you're on the green carpet wearing something new every time. Is what's the point of that? Because then you're actually adding to the problem. What about wearing things better and more, and actually wearing them over again several times? And she's become an advocate of that very much. And now she will post things on Instagram and on Twitter where it's like hashtag 30 wears, and it will be maybe something she's inherited from her mother or something she has herself owned for a long time, and she will tell the story behind that. And I think it's something that's important, because it's about how we talk about our clothes, because the fashion industry and the fashion press has been very much about, yeah, the new seasons must have, you have to, you know, this season you have to buy this, that, and whatever. And fashion actually, it doesn't change. It's the biggest lie out there. Fashion is always, of course, in motion, because the people want to sell different things, but the same trends that are each fall, you can find them over and over and over again. And having been an editor in a fashion magazine, I know this, because we'd always just, you know, oh shit, we can't use it this season, because we used it the last season, but it'll still be out there, it'll still be a trend. So things are actually the same all the time, but they haven't changed since maybe the 1980s or something, 1980s, 1990s. After that, everything is just recycled as the same trends over and over again. She's been very good at changing the way one talks about things, and that's what's important, is how we talk about our clothes, not as something new, but as something that we like and that we feel that we look good in, not because it's new, but it could be because it's old and that we wear it over and over again, and then, so we need the conversation about our clothes also to change.
Yeah, no, I agree in that. It's great that you and also Livia are doing that. And what would you maybe recommend to young designers or entrepreneurs who are looking at wool and starting their business? How can they incorporate these kind of thoughts into their business?
Well, I think it needs to be, you know, most designers, when they have a collection, they can talk about it in this way. You know, they can talk about the materials they use and why they use those materials, and that they want something to last. They want it to be something that one can build a wardrobe around, not something that is just a seasonal item that will be, you know, ready to throw out after the 3 or 4 months. If that's their aim, that, you know, people should buy over and over again new stuff, then they should work with something that is, of course, biodegradable, which wool in the long run or also is, but that shouldn't be the aim of why they're creating clothes, because why would you want to do that as a designer? Most designers don't want that. They don't want to sell something to the consumer that the consumer will feel is old or dated. after a short while. I'm sure that would, you know, be fairly sad for most designers to think that, oh, I'm just giving them something that that will have a very short life. So in all sorts of communication with their customers, they should, you know, also tell the customer how to best take care of the clothing. Because with wool, of course, there is a problem with moths, which the consumer needs to learn how to handle, and about how to care for it with the laundering, that wool can actually be machine washed and should be spun at the, you know, end of the wash cycle with a high speed, so you get the water out of the products, because it's in the water that the dirt is. And that you don't have to dry the wool items flat. That's old fashioned. And as long as you get the water spun out of it, then it can hang and dry anyway. And that you actually don't need to launder it all that often. That you can just air it, and it'll be just fine again.
And what's your term? You earlier mentioned design destined for trash, DDT, yeah. And what's then the contrary to that? What designers should aim for?
And that's wonderful to wear. We call it W2W. Wonderful.
Wonderful. Well, very creative. Thank you for sharing that. Well, before we close, the session, where can our audience get in contact with you or find out more about you and your work?
Well, on generally, they can check out nicefashion.org, which will automatically bring you over to nordicfashionassociation.com. But I sort of steer all the nicefashion.org pages. And there we post a lot of news on what's happening. And Cruz also has an area there, as well as the other wool projects that we've done, including Viking Gold, which was a project with old sheep breeds in Norway, and the Viking heritage. But then, of course, Instagram, Tone Tobiasson, and also Twitter. And generally, I try to make such a nuisance of myself that most people will have a hard time not finding me.
Okay, and we'll also link to our your different websites and social media accounts in our show notes so that people can find you very easily. Well, thank you so much, Tone, for your time. It was very interesting to talk to you, and I appreciate that you shared all your different insights with us.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Make sure you access all the additional information about today's show by going to our website. Visit elizabethvandelden.com/003. That is elizabethvandelden.com/003.
If you liked today's show, may we recommend that you subscribe to our podcast so that you don't miss any of our next episodes, and also do us a favor and tell your colleagues and friends about us. That would mean the world to us, and thank you, and see you next week. Bye-bye.